So, trouble. Nice, light-hearted topic for us to talk about. Thank you, Chris. You work through these sorts of subjects and you think about, inevitably, your first thoughts go to the trouble in your own life and the troubles that you've encountered. And for myself, there have been times in my life where I have suffered acutely. I get visited every now and again by flashbacks from an event that happened a few years ago, and I lost the better part of a night's sleep about it a couple of weeks ago. But on the whole, actually, speaking as someone who knows a little bit about how people lived historically, but also as someone who talks to other people, I actually think I've had it pretty easy, by and large. So if at any point in what I'm going to say, you think to yourself, well, how can you possibly know? How can you possibly relate to what I've been through? The answer is I probably can't. But this is the best I can do. Because we all face troubles in our lives, and I'm not going to list the possible ways in which you can encounter trouble, because we know them all too very well. They're probably up there in the front of our minds as among the most pressing thoughts in our heads. I don't have to encourage you to go digging for them. And one of the things I noticed, when I was thinking about this sermon, we were watching The Traitors. And I noticed when the various participants were talking about what they would do if they won the prize money, it got into a bit of a contest. Not an overt one, and yet it was there. And so one person said that, she's a single mother. She's in need of the funds to support her family. And another person said, well, I've got a brother who's been very deeply ill or who has a disability, and I want to give money to a charity. And another person said, well, I want to have IVF because I want another child, but I can't have one. And when one guy said, well, I just want to buy a house, it's almost as though, what? You don't count. Because we do this too, don't we? We compare our troubles. Who has the greater right, who doesn't? And certainly Psalm 3 has got to be written by someone at a time where someone's facing acute trouble, suffering. It's where King David was facing a rebellion from his own son, and he was losing. And again, it doesn't take a great deal of empathy to sort of unpack or to get a sense of the enormity of what that must feel like. And the psalm itself is David calling out to God. Interestingly, he's not just calling out on his own part, but if you look at the last few lines, he's calling out on the part of the society of which he is a member and the leader. And the psalm itself fits, it chimes with other messages throughout the Bible, whether in the Old Testament or the New. I don't have to go digging to find them. John 16:33. I have told you all this so that that in me you may find peace. In the world you will have trouble, but courage, the victory is mine. I have conquered the world. Jesus doesn't promise us health or wealth necessarily. He doesn't promise us happiness, despite the promises of someone I saw on TV who talked about receiving a BMW as the obvious answer for prayer. I am not in any way impugning those who views with BMWs. But we are told this is part of our experience. This is part of what it is to be Christian. Perhaps even more so. Let me read another similar passage from Matthew. This is Matthew 10:22. Brother will betray brother to death, and the father his child. Children will turn against their parents and send them to death. All will hate you for your allegiance to me, but the man who holds out to the end will be saved. And in there, possibly, there is the suggestion that Christians will suffer more, precisely because they are trying to serve God. And in my own small way, I can empathize with that. I have never felt more challenged, more under threat, more under attack in ways I hadn't expected than when I've co-run the Alpha course, particularly if I felt the Alpha course is making a difference. And I wondered then, am I experiencing these things precisely because I am trying to serve Jesus? So suffering is part of the Christian experience, and it raises the question, well, what do we make of this? How do we respond to this? Will God take this trouble away? And again, all I can call upon really here is my own experience. Yes, in some cases God does. God does take the trouble and suffering away. There was an occasion I remember distinctly. I was standing next to a zebra crossing outside the Baptist church in Mumbles, Swansea, if you want to know. Mumbles. You know Mumbles? Very good. And I was intensely, I can't even remember what I was worried about, but I was intensely worried about something. And I gave it to God. It wasn't problems on the scale of King David, but nonetheless it was preoccupying me. And I felt about there, like a plug being pulled out of the back of my head. And it just went away, just like that. This is rare, but it has happened. There have been times where I have felt threatened or I have felt myself in a sinister environment. And I have said a prayer, and at risk of trivializing it, how many of you can visualize Star Trek when the shields come up around the ship? Oh yes, I've got some Trekkies there, very good. It felt like that, but in a non-geeky way. And there have been times, rare, but times that I will never forget, when I have witnessed what I believe to be miracles. People who are healed there and then, with no scientific explanation, a prayer has been made, healing has taken place, that's it. But again, it's rare. It does happen. But often it doesn't. And I can't explain to you why it happens in some cases and not in others, for the simple reason that I am not God, obviously. But there's a broader story to be told here too. Because, of course, Jesus' entire life is one of trouble. Not just trouble at its end, with the torture inflicted on him, the suffering inflicted on him, and ultimately execution in the most gruesome of forms. But all the way through his life, when his neighbours in Nazareth try to throw him off a cliff for preaching God's word in the synagogue, for being constantly called out and pestered throughout his preaching by people who felt that they knew better than him. All the way through his life, it's one of trouble. And so clearly God does allow suffering, allow trouble. And again, I can't explain fully why, except that this is a broken world and that we brought the suffering in here ourselves, if you go back to Genesis. And so in this world, bad things do happen to good people. And good things do happen to bad people, to put it simplistically. But with these sorts of matters, I like to think about what is encouraging, what is in warm, what can be said about these things to give meaning to them, to better understand them. And one of the first things that came to mind is, well, to think about Jesus. What was the purpose of Jesus' suffering? Why did he have to go through all of that? And of course, the answer is that Jesus had to do that as a sacrificial lamb for our sins. Yes, of course. But I think there's something else to this as well. Now, the source for this is late, speaking as a historian, but nonetheless, it stuck with me. And that is that according to a later source describing the life of Jesus, in the wake of the crucifixion, Pontius Pilate wrote a full account of the whole thing and sent it to the Imperial Senate in Rome, explaining what he had seen and how he had seen it. I do not know if that is historically true or not, but it's always stuck with me. The document itself hasn't survived, along with most documents from that era. But it did bring something home to me. And that is a feature of human experience, which is that when suffering is happening to someone, we have an instinctive urge to watch. We look at people when they're suffering. We look at how they react. We are curious about it. And indeed, I've often wondered if part of the reason for the early church, the church formed originally around Jesus, was witnessing not just what Jesus said, but how he reacted in his time of suffering. And it's also notable, again, speaking a little bit as a historian, that the Christian church, both by percentage and in total numbers, grew incredibly rapidly in its first two centuries. Historians have suggested a growth rate of something in the region of 40% every 10 years in total numbers for the first two centuries. And those were also the first two centuries of intense persecution within the Roman Empire. People watch when you're suffering. They watch how you respond. Because we do respond to suffering in different ways. A victim has a number of different ways in which they can respond to what they're going through. If you look at more or less any of the present conflicts in the world, the conflicts we see on the news every day, how many of those conflicts can you think of that are not ultimately rooted in someone's either victimhood or perception of victimhood? I defy you to find many, possibly none. And that too runs through history. We can respond to suffering with anger, by a desire to strike back in the righteous knowledge that because we have suffered, therefore we have an inalienable right to inflict that on someone else. Or we can turn on ourselves. If you want to know, I was intensely bullied as a child at the age of 11 for about 7 months. And I did ultimately turn the tables on my bullies, but one of the moments that sticks out to me in my mind when I think about the latter weeks of that period is where I suddenly identified, and again, I can remember exactly where I was when I had this thought. This is a pivotal moment in my life. I can remember the moment where I suddenly heard the voice inside me that said, you need more bullying to validate your victim status. You need to almost encourage the bullying, so that you can therefore attract more sympathy. You can be more embedded, more entrenched in your victim status. And I remember the enormous feeling of horror I felt when I recognized that voice within myself, and I would say that, as much as any other event that took place, was the turning point which ended that period in my life. We respond to victimhood in different ways, and we respond to trouble in different ways. But how would God want us to respond to victimhood? Because there are other ways to respond to trouble. As I've said, people look at you when you are suffering, when you are in trouble. It's the reason, I think, that when public executions take place, to pick a grisly example, that always draws crowds. I don't think it's just about the bloodlust of the populace. I think they want to see how the person is going to act in their last minutes. Now, that's an extreme example, but that curiosity is there. And I think God's message to us in our time of suffering is to reach out to God. There are other ways to respond to trouble. There are other ways to respond to suffering. There are ways to walk with God, to be who we are genuinely supposed to be more authentically us than the desire to be, to act the victim, as it were, would make us. And I think that though God doesn't take necessarily our trouble away, although sometimes he does, he can help us to remain genuinely ourselves rather than being bent out of shape by what is being inflicted upon us. We can't always change the fact that we are being persecuted. Sometimes these things are beyond our control, whether it is our body, the people around us, our experiences. We can't necessarily change these things, although sometimes we can. But we can affect our response to them, how we act. And I think that there are two lines of comfort in that. The first is the knowledge that we can walk through a time of struggling with God's help as ourselves. We don't lose who we are in the process. And the second line of comfort in that is that I think within that, we can also perhaps provide something that other people can see in us, our children, our friends, our community, our work colleagues, whoever it is that is affected. We can show something to them about how who you are and how God moves you in your life, how God can impact you, can change you, can help you to be strong in your weakness. And I was thinking to God about how I would end this, and I just came up with the words from Abide With Me, and the words that I've always found tremendously moving in that song, which go, I triumph still if you abide in me.